Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody. How are you? This is Wardell Potts Jr., the drummer of Dynasty, and we are here today at Solar Records Radio to celebrate the sound of Los Angeles Records. Oh, what a wonderful time it was for us back there. We had a wonderful time putting the music together for you guys, and we are so blessed that you guys were blessed by it as well as we were. And so today we just want to just go back down memory lane and just reminisce on that show. Every Friday on Solar Records Radio, we celebrate the sound of Los Angeles Records. Right.
Silvers, Edmund and Ricky Silvers. Edmund, I'd like for you to clarify a bit of confusion that has come to our attention, and that's in regard to just what is the relationship between Foster Silvers and the Silvers. Who is this guy, Foster Silvers?
Yeah, well, in our whole family, there's 10 of us all together. And Foster, he's the second youngest out of the whole family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he's just recently been chosen to do the new single.
And I understand Misdemeanor was originally written rather for the group, for the Silvers.
Yeah, but
whose decision was it to give it to Foster?
Well, Leon, he originally wrote it for us, but I guess he chose to give it to Foster and give Foster a chance.
And it worked out quite well. Ricky, would you like to introduce the superstar?
Yeah. Well, before I introduce Foster, I'd like to introduce Angela and Patricia, two of our younger sisters, and they're singing with Foster on Misdemeanor, yeah. So I'd like to introduce Foster. Ladies and gentlemen, Foster Silver.
Love and devotion.
Don't
it's a track of lost emotion. It's gonna slip as she goes on. But it's just a bit on your nerves. You've got to get over it.
What you gonna do?
When I think I'm in love and I catch my girl doing me wrong. It's just enough to set back in the mind.
Like when you get your first ticket for illegal parking.
So many of my friends and different people that I talk to, when they hear that song, they just always the hip hop community as well, because you know you're constantly are seeing and hearing that underneath the music and stuff. So once again, this is Odell Pashfield, a loving welcome. And hello, how are you guys over there? I hope things are well for you, as it's getting cooler and cooler here in the United States. I know up in Europe, in the UK, you guys are cooling down as well. So, and you guys been cooling down, as a matter of fact. So just want to give a shout out to all you guys and my friends just all over that region. There's a lot going on over there, right? And some things that are not so comfortable, especially with the war right there in Ukraine. So we are, you know, just praying for Ukrainians and just anyone in that environment. You know, it's a scary situation, and we're just praying for the best outcome, which means, you know, we want it to stop, just done, finish, over, you know, and so we can enjoy life. As life has enough challenges as it is, and we don't need anything extra to make us uncomfortable, right? So, but, you know, guys, thank you for tuning in, and, you know, and, yeah, sometimes we just need to get away from what's going on around us and just kind of let music be a pillow, you know, kind of like just, yeah, you know, this, and try to help you mentally, you know, just go someplace else, right? So we're glad that you let Solar Records Radio do that for you. much love and many blessings to you guys, to my friends in South Africa. What's up down in South Africa as it is turning summer there? So the seasons are flipped, and so they're getting ready. They're heating up over there, and so much love to you guys in Johannesburg and Cape Town. And I had so much fun. I stayed in Halton, and I stayed in Kensington, and in Johannesburg. I recorded in Hillsbrow. I recorded in Hillsbrow, and that was a very wonderful experience for me to be able to hang out with people from another country and record with them and learn their lingo and just to learn their ways and just and feel their heart. It was a blessing being there. South Africa, you know, you own my heart now. I fell in love with South Africa. And so much love to you guys. To my friends over in, what's that? Jamaica. What's up, Jamaica? How you doing? Much love. I hope you guys are good. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We appreciate you guys. And I understand that the whole Caribbeans, we got connections throughout the Caribbean. So thank you. We just pray everybody's good. The hurricanes are over, right? The tornadoes or whatever you call them things. The hurricanes, yeah. They're done. The season's over. So I think we had the last one just a couple of weeks ago. So I'm just praying everybody can rebuild and be okay. Wow, that's crazy. Every year we have to kind of figure out a way to get rid of those things, right? And so, but anyway, let's get back to the music, guys. I just want to say to you, you know, it's the music that was created from Los Angeles was music that was very much a huge blessing to Leon Silver's and to be the chef in the kitchen. And my, did he do an amazing job. All right. Well, somehow we lost our connection. We got cut out. The microphone separated, but we'll figure it out. We're back now. And I guess you guys can hear me on this microphone, right? So, it's always something, I tell you. I was trying to tell you how much we loved what we were doing. What a blessing it was for us. And I hear echoes now. So let's see if I can figure that out. And so anyway, we're in the studio constantly. Dick Griffey brought Leon Silvers in. What a blessing that was. And then we were in a studio called Studio Masters, which was owned by the Woods family. John Woods was and Larry Woods were the sons that ran the studio. And it was a small but beautiful studio. We had like three different rooms to record in, which was really, really nice. And every day, every single day we were in there just going at it every day. And it was one of those things. It was like a school for us, a school for me for sure, just getting in there and figuring things out. I was in college at the same time. A couple of us, Kevin Spencer and myself, were going to LACC College. And so right after we would leave school, we'd go over to the studio in Beverly Hills and we'd just start recording. And I remember one time we left school and we came over and there was a company there that was doing a commercial, and we were doing the music for the commercial, and it was a Mountain Dew commercial, a soda pop commercial, and that was fun. And I'm trying to find that commercial. When I find it, I've been reaching out for it. It was fun. It was a really nice commercial that we did the music for, and it was based off of Make That Move. It was that they loved that feel of Make That Move. And so they were like, can you guys do that for us? And so we did. And when I walked in, they were already working on, you know, the music and stuff. And so, and I was like looking for like paperwork, and maybe you have some paperwork you want me, you know, to read the parts. And so I went to the control room, and I was like, they all looked at me. I was like, hey, what's going on? Do you have any paperwork? What do you want me to do? And they said, no, we want you to just play what you feel. And there's a couple of Asian guys in there with Leon, and I was like, okay. I never seen these guys before. I was like, okay, I'll play what I feel. So I went into the studio, and we started the song, and it was so natural. And I think that's when we had discovered that we really do have a sound, that we really do have something, because everybody just fell into place. Steve Shockley from Lakeside was playing his part. Kevin just started playing on the acoustic piano his part. William Shelby was playing his part. And Leon was playing his part on the bass. And I played my part on the drum. And we were going at it and going at it. And it was beautiful. And so what I'm telling you, as soon as we get it, I'm going to play it for you. I've been begging, and so we'll see who comes up with it and sends it and over here to us. So speaking of William Shelby, I'm going to play a song that William Shelby and I wrote for Dynasty off of the first album. And this song that we did is called Day and Night, and this is William Shelby Wardell Potts featuring William Shelby on the vocals.
Came along and there with my heart. Now with the woman like her, Excuse me, madam, you're standing still in a no parking zone. If you don't get a move on that body, I'll be forced to give you a ticket. So
we
every time I hear that song, I'm always thinking of Ring My Bell by, you know, Anita Ward. And I'm the answer to Ring My Bell. And so pull my string. If you want me to ring your bell, then pull my string. Lord have mercy. Some suggestive lyrics, but I, you know. Oh, boy, we were just kids. We didn't know what we were doing. But I love that song. It's a lot of fun, and it's very busy. I hope that you guys can hear me. Greg will let me know. So anyway, I do want to answer a question. And so, Greg, we're good. We're good over here. I can go ahead on and answer the question, sir. There was a question that came in, let me get the answer first in case I have to switch microphones here. Cutting out again. I'm not sure what is going on. I'm doing my best. All right, let me switch back to the other microphone then. I'm just going to do that and just enjoy this for a second. Let me get to this story. Enjoy this. For that, I don't know what's going on with our main microphone, but Greg said it's breaking up, so that's so be it. So let me see here. I want to get to the questions, and thank you for sending questions through Messenger or on our page. We appreciate that. We appreciate you, and thank you for. If we don't know the answer, we will find the answer for you. Okay. So I'm supposed to be talking about. Can you talk about the song Groove Controlled, written by William Shelby and Linda Carrier? Do you remember them bringing it in and working on it and recording it? So this is how that worked. Answer is the songs were being written as we were going. Okay, so as we were going, William Shelby came up with the track idea, and Leon would work around that and start building from there. And so before you know it, we're all playing to this track. And then as we're playing to the track, then they start to find melodies and lyrics to go to the track. So and whoever is available at the time that Leon thought would be best suited to write the lyrics, he would take that song to them. So in this case, it was Linda. And so, anyway, let me just get back to this particular song. Groove Control was a song that when I got there, they had already had an idea of the song already. They've been going back and forth. And so, Leon brought me in and said, I have this groove that I'm doing, but I need you to play drums on it. And I said, oh, cool, okay. And so we went in, and it was a couple of songs. We did, that night, we did Groove Control. And so what I'll do, I'm going to play both of these songs for you. Groove Control and, In the Socket. And so and that was a Shalimar song. And so it was interesting because I was just, you know, still very new to this. We had just did Second Time Around and the Beat Goes On, which was like mega hits for them, right? But it was, for me, I was a new kid on the block, so I had no idea what I was getting involved in. And probably it was best that I didn't. Probably would I would have probably been a little more nervous than I already was. So let me drink some water because I'm getting dehydrated. Okay, so then I enjoyed both of the songs. I enjoyed recording both of the songs, and it was something about Groove Control just felt so funky, and it was so driven. It was just a wonderful drive, and so that was fun for me, recording Groove Control, and it was a learning experience, you know, just learning how Leon works in the studio, learning what he wanted, you know, and just learning how to be a pocket drummer versus being a progressive jazz drummer. It was a total learning session for me. And this was at the very beginning. So it was more, you know, as time went on, it became like a jam session, right, when we were recording, because now we knew each other and we were just giving it our all and just, okay, come in and do your thing and just feel it and bam, you know. But this, in the beginning, Groove Control and In the Socket, Second Time Around, and The Beat Goes On, that was more of a stressful kind of thing because it was a learning process. I was still learning the process. I was still learning, you know, what Leon wanted from us, learning the other guys that I was recording with and what they were doing and how they would respond to the demands of Leon in terms of his direction. And, you know, and so, and it was just, so your eyes are wide open and, you know, and you're just like, and your ears are wide open and you're just going for it. And you just like, okay, that's what you want. Okay, you like that? You like what I did? Okay, I'll do that again. And you just keep on. And so we would go over these songs over and over and over until Leon said, that was a good take. That was a good take. I want to keep that take. And the reason why he would say that was a good take is because he loved the way the drums felt. and the reason that he would do it this way is because he would build from the ground up. So he wanted to make sure he had a good feel on the drums first, that they felt good, right? And then we would go back in and he would fix any parts of his that he didn't feel good about. And most of the time we would keep most of the stuff and just punch in and fix the, you know, maybe a couple of notes here and there. And then after he did the bass part, then he would do the keyboard part or the guitar part and get those right. And then before you know it, the whole track is clean, tight, and right. And we would be just like, wow, that really sounds good. And so, but the drums, you couldn't just punch in the drums, even though we attempted to do that a couple of times because it just, everything felt so good. And so Leon said, okay, punch in every track. When we get to the bridge, just punch in right in there. And this is the thing. Our timing and our pocket would have to be the same. So we can't fluctuate. And we didn't use sequencers. And we didn't use, you know, a metronomes. It was like one, two, three, you know. And we would have to lock that pocket in. And so that's what we did. We locked the pocket in. And, but, you know, he didn't like punching in the multi-track on 24 tracks because it was too hard. It was too many things simultaneously that you're recording into and you could clip off so much stuff. So the most important thing for Leon was to make sure we got those drums right. Then we get that bass. Now we got the foundation locked and then we start building on top of the foundation. And so the other thing, Full of Fire, that song, it's Full of Fire was the song. And so Full of Fire was the other song that we did that night. And so, and Full of Fire was a Shalimar song. But I loved it because I was able to you know, play my tom-toms. You know, it's a long role in that song. And I was able to do that consistently. And so that was just a whole nother, another aspect that I didn't do on any of the other songs. So it was something that I look forward to. Plus, I loved it because it was up-tempo, but I also loved it because it had more progressive Latin kind of feel in it. And so it took me back to my roots in Philadelphia, as you know, so Full of Fire for me was full of fire. And I really was having a lot of fun recording that song and watching the guys doing their thing. And it was a beautiful environment, you know, because like we were all young and we had come from different parts of the country. As William Shelby is from Dayton, Ohio, and Ricky and Kevin is from California, and I am from Philadelphia, and so Stephen Shockley is from Ohio as well, and so we're in there, and we're just going at it, man, and so we all came together to create the sound of Los Angeles, and that was what a gift. Thank you. And Mr. Griffey has heard us, and you know, he kept us, and he made sure that Leon kept his core together. Oh, I don't know if it was him, but when he told Leon how much he enjoyed the way we sounded, you know, Leon knew that he was barking up the right tree and that he was going to keep that unit together. So with that being said, I'm going to play that song, starting with Groove Control, and then I will go to Full of Fire by Shalimar, and then one more song I will play, and then we'll come back right after this. Thank you so much for the questions, and thank you for listening to Solar Records Radio as we love celebrating the sound of Los Angeles Records. We'll be back.
I got through control. Can't let I keep running for you.
Wow, that's so beautiful. Just listening to Cinderella, as she calls herself, singing that song. It's just so well done, so beautiful. And that song is huge for Climax, and so proud of them and their accomplishments to get that done, right? So listen, I want to I have another question in regards to Carrie Lucas, Show Me Where You're Coming From. And so in regards to that, in regards to the question is how did that one come about? Well, it was written by myself and Kevin Spencer, and I forgot who else. But anyway, Glenn Barbie, I believe. And so so the song was written, but the thing is, at that point, when we started doing that, hold on one second, I got to check on Greg. Oh, okay, so at that point, when we started doing that song, we had now come into our own in terms of, you know, we knew what we were doing. We felt very comfortable. We had been, it's been confirmed by the industry. It's been confirmed by the record company, which was Solar. It's been confirmed by our peers, other producers, or, you know, for a lot of big hits and stuff. We would see them in a place called Local 47. That was our union, the musicians union. And that's, you know, where we went and got paid for playing on all these records. And everybody would be in line, just a whole bunch of us. And, hey, man, how you doing? You know, and it's just all these guys are doing Michael Jackson stuff, anything with Warner Brothers, and just all the main cats. We all were there, radio, and all the guys from radio. And we had came into our own. This is about 4 years, 3 years, 3 years of just constant hitting, constantly recording, 2 or 3 years. Because after the second year of just constantly hitting. So this is what happened. Really, what really changed it, I think, for at least for me. Once we did those albums, the first albums starting in 79, which Second Time Around and The Beat Goes On. Once we did those albums and Dynasty's album, we went on the road. Dynasty's album, the one that had I Just Begun to Love You, we went on the road. And when we went on the road, the Solar Galaxies of Stars tour, that changed everything for me, because now not only am I getting confirmation from the industry, and our peers, but now you guys, the listeners, the people that are actually buying the records and saying, we like it. Now we are playing live, and I got to play with Dynasty and Shalamar live. So it was, you know, oh my God, what an eye opener. And it was kind of overwhelming because, you know, I mean, the tour went on for like 6 to 8 months, and we were just everywhere, going everywhere around the United States. There were so many cities, and we were just, you know, and sometimes multiple cities in one state. And so, but once we got that confirmation that, yes, that's it. We love you. We love what you guys are doing. Keep doing it. Don't stop. Give us more. We were excited. So when we got back to the studio, and in some cases, we couldn't even get back to the studio in Beverly Hills because the demand was so on for us to get these records ready for the next release that we would record in other studios as we were on the road trying to get back, but they never sound the same. So a lot of those recordings that we did in other studios, the sound is so important, especially with the drums. And so we got back to Studio Masters and was like, yes. And not just did we have our studio, but we also had our engineers, and everything was back to normal. And so the whole team, everybody on the team matters. Everybody on the team matters in making it, you know, what it is and what it was. And so, and I'm so grateful for all those guys, you know, Steve Hodge, who's now, you know, kind of stuck with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis, Janet Jackson stuff. He did all this, her stuff with them. And so, but that's because we were done with our run. And when Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis started their run out in Minnesota, Minneapolis, Steve Hodge went there and worked with them. And his legacy continued. It was beautiful to watch. So getting back to the answer. So that song, Showing Me Where You're Coming From, was a song that when we got back in the studio this time, and we got the confidence from all of you guys, plus our peers, that our stuff was good and they love it. Please keep giving us this kind of music where it's clean, it's funky, and the quality is great. And so we had a responsibility at that point when we got in the studio to stay at that level, if not go higher. Our goal was to go higher and higher, and we were pushing to get better and better and to make the sound better and better. Because at that point, we noticed other people were, you know, doing the same stuff that we were doing. They were recording and trying to sound like that sound. And, you know, and that, if that was the popular sound, then that's what you're supposed to do. So other people started doing it. So we had to keep taking it up another notch. So when we went in and did this song, Show Me Where You're Coming From, that's where we were mentally, like we were taking it up another notch from the stuff we did, like And the Beat Goes On, Second Time Around. We were ready to take it up another notch. And Groove Control, we was ready. Let's go to the next stage. So this was the beginning of that next stage. And so thank you for the question. I really appreciate it. As a matter of fact, I wrote the song as well. I think I did mention that. And so I'll play it, and then we'll come back and answer the next question so you can hear what I'm talking about in terms of, you know, how we were moving forward with the opportunity that Dick Griffey had given us, all of us, you know, and Leon Sewers had given all of us. So here we go on Soul Art Records Radio. We'll be right back. All right. So fun that is, and fun that was for us. And so I'm going to the next question here. I hope you guys are enjoying this. This is very interesting. It always stimulates my brain, and it's always like, oh, my goodness. And I have to do this recall, right, this instant recall. And so thank you so much for participating in this with me here. So anyway, I know it's interesting for some of you guys. It's like, what? This is an inside scoop. And, you know, for me, I'm glad that it's recorded so I can listen back to it, because I forgot about a lot of this stuff until I get these questions from you guys. So thank you. So how did Dick Griffey give us feedback and about how he felt about everything? Did he call meetings? And can you recall any meetings to discuss things? So to basically break it down like this, Dick Griffey didn't need to make meetings with the band, the musicians, the writers, and the producers. He only needed to talk to his co-pilot, which was Leon Silvers. And then Leon, after they had their conversation, Leon would come and tell us what was, you know, that, you know, Dick expected and what he expected and what we needed to do to get prepared for the next company. And it was just a lot of stuff. It was coming at us. For the most part, everything was positive. It was like, you know, we got a roll going. Everybody knew we had a roll going. The radio stations was playing everything that we were doing. And it was just like, oh, this is hot. We cannot let this stop. And so it was always good information coming back from Dick Griffey to Leon Silvers to us. And so, there's times when Dick would come into the studio and hang out with us and groove with us and just have a good time. But when it came down to the business aspects, the heavy business parts of it or creative ideas, he would run those by Leon. And not necessarily us. We didn't need to know those things. It wasn't on our pay grade, if you will. And also, you know, JCAD may have ideas that may work, and he may have ideas that didn't work. And so we didn't need to know, you know, those things. That was between him and Leon. And Leon would just say, oh, it's a good idea. Or he'd say, nah, I'm not going to go with that one. And so, but for the most part, Leon was in control of the music and how it was going to happen, pretty much. And if somebody had a different idea and they were, you know, persistent in their idea, Leon would say, okay, I tell you what I'll do. I'm going to do your version, I'm going to do my version. And then we'll let Dick pick which one he wants. And so, and I'm going to tell you right now, my version, I'm going to tell him that that's the one I like. So, and so he would be fair and he would do, you know, to, because it's best that we all try to get along. And sometimes as we're going and as we're growing, people can get really, like artists can start to become, start, you know, feeling themselves like, hey, you know, I'm getting better now. And, you know, when I first started working with you, Leon, I didn't know crap, but, you know, I'm better now for this next album, and I have some ideas and some thoughts. And Leon would listen to the thoughts, but if it didn't lay, it wouldn't stay. You know, because y'all remember the saying, if it lays, it stays. So he listens to your ideas, but if it wasn't working, it wasn't going anywhere. And so, and that was just the bottom line. And some people would be very upset if what they thought was good didn't lay and it got nixed. Nope, we're not going to use that. And they get upset and they try to, you know, go to the next level. And there really was no next level, even though they go to Dick Griffey, but Dick Griffey hired Leon to do that. So you got to go back to Leon and discuss that with Leon, whatever your problem was, because he's the boss. So anyway, all right, so then what happened is now, so we're going now we, like when we started, did that Carrie Lucas Show Me Where You Can't Come From thing, we were feeling ourselves, like I said, we were on this next level. And so we started, then we had moved over to Warner Brothers. We weren't at RCA anymore. And so now this new energy, this new fire and desire to give them the best that we can give them. And at the same time, we had just came off the road. We learned what you guys liked and what you guys wanted. And we were putting it all together. It was just chemistry that naturally happened. And we would go in the studio. We could just close our eyes. We didn't even have to look at each other no more. We understood, everybody understood their part and knew exactly what was expected of them, and everybody gotten better. We all were growing, and we got better and better. And the records were going higher and higher on the charts, and the people were buying more and more records. It was a wonderful combination. We were really being blessed by you guys, like you guys are being blessed by us. And see, that's what it's all about. We could do this thing together in this whole world. If we just work together and love on each other, we could be blessed by each other. But when we fight with each other, we destroy the very thing that we're trying to build. So we have to just try to grow up. Stop talking about paying people back. I heard the newscaster the other day go, well, if somebody punched you in the face, what are you supposed to do? Just lay there and take it? You know, because they want to go and fight once they get power. They want to fight. It's like, listen, sometimes you have to take the higher step and say, you know what, for the betterment of everybody, for the country, for the records, for the music, for everybody, I'm not going to go to crazy place and fight with you. I'm going to do what I think is best for everybody, and I'm going to hold that, and I'm going to submit to what is right and what is best. And then that way things could really turn into a blessing, and that's what it was for us. Because we were not fighting amongst each other. We were just doing what we were sent there to do, and we loved it. And so I'm going to play you another song that this is, we were right there. We're going to another level. Now, this song I'm going to play you is by The Whispers, and it's called It's a Love Thing. The Whispers could not understand what was happening with this song. In the beginning, when it came on, they were like, "What's this Chinese song? What is this?" They did not understand it because it was, now we have launched and took a step in another direction. We were going someplace else. We wanted to create something so new, and we did. And they just could, like, what? And so anyway, I want you to hear, it's different. It starts off different than all the songs because it was time, and we were blessed with this. And no one told anyone what to do. That's the weirdest thing. It was just like, da, 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 da. Like, whoa, what is that? I started doing swells on my cymbal. It just sounded like, you know, it was like we were at a big concert and something big was about to happen. Somebody big was about to come out. And for The Whispers, that was them. This song was an introduction to an opening because The Whispers are about to come out. And so, but they didn't understand it. They were confused. They're like, what is going on here? How is this a song? But when that groove dropped, they were like, whoa. So check it out on Solar Records Radio. We'll be right back. Man, oh man.
It's a love thing.
Alrighty, alrighty, guys. Alright, so anyway, so you got to hear On Top of the World by Shalamar. And that song, On Top of the World by Shalamar, we were feeling really good. We were going someplace else, like I said. And you heard what I said about It's a Love Thing, how it came in. And then Whispers was like, what is this Chinese song? What's that? What is going on here? They couldn't figure it out. And so it ended up being one of the most celebrated songs that they have. I mean, when that song comes on, when they perform it live, the people just jump out of their seats. And it's amazing. And so, you know, that's one of my regrets right there. That's one of my regrets. And that is this, that those songs that we did on the Whispers, when I go and I hear them perform it live, I wish that I was up there playing it too. I want to play it too because it's reliving such a wonderful moment, right? And but it's gone now. It's not there anymore. That moment is gone. So when I hear the Whispers in concert, it's like, wow, oh man, I wish I was playing that song because it's so much fun, and I can see how much fun they are having. But their drummer is so good, and he's been with them for so long, and I'm so proud of him that, you know what, even if I was offered that position, I wouldn't take it from him unless he was giving it up. So, but anyway, let me see here. With all the same musicians on most of the songs and tracks, what distinguished the sound of each act to make them have their own identity? What? Because that's true. We all were. It was the same people. On all the Shalamar stuff and all the Whispers stuff and all the Carrie Lucas stuff and all the Dynasty stuff, it was all the same people, same writers.
You know something, though? I think, you know, when people talk about there's all of these artists and things like this, there was always a distinction. It wasn't cookie cutter. You know who Shalamar was. You know who Lakeside was. You know who, all of these other groups were Dynasty, and it was about the voice. It was about the voice. And you think about someone like Mark Wood or Otis Stoke in Lakeside, you knew who they were. Now, as far as Shalamar and the Whispers, you know who Walter and Scotty sound like. You know, you knew Walter and Scotty. You knew their voices. You knew Kevin Spencer's voice. So it was always a distinction. It was always these different layers of that Solar sound that, you know, Leon Silvers helped to kind of bring to fruition and to, you know, for the masses to hear. You know, to me, it was all about that bass line. But again, not to stray away from your point, it was just about those voices, man. It's like, you know, even working with someone like Evelyn Champagne King, you know, it's just amazing, Wardell. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I love your answer, and I agree with you 100%, because that had to be the ID. The voices had to be, because everything else was the same. And so that's why I say Shalamar and Dynasty is really the same group, just different voices. It's the same group. You know, just everybody's writing and producing and playing on all the songs, but with different voices. So you're exactly right. And we would write a little, as we were growing, we started trying to write a little differently for Dynasty, because Dynasty, we wanted to take Dynasty to a level, Dynasty should have been at a level of Earth, Wind, and Fire, but we couldn't get there because we couldn't put enough attention on Dynasty
because Dynasty had the responsibility of everybody else's stuff. And so, and then we couldn't even go back out on the road and perform and learn more from the audience because we were stuck in the studio. So we did that tour, and then we did another half a tour with Teddy Pendergrass and Evelyn Champagne King. And, you know, we should have had, like, I mean, look, Lakeside can't tell you how many tours they've done. They've done so many tours. That should be where we were, but we couldn't get out the studio. So we were cursed by our blessing. You see,
right.
We were cursed by our blessing. Our blessing was a beautiful thing, but it also stopped us from doing what else we should have and wanted to do. Should have done and wanted to do. And so that was a catch-22. So,
yeah.
But great question. That was a great question because you know, people, it's hard. It's hard when it's like when people heard us, they would say, "You guys sound like Shalimar." Hello, we are Shalimar. You guys sound like the Whispers.
I mean, when you listen to the music, the production and the composition and all of that, when you hear something like "Night to Remember," and you listen to the instrumental and all of the instrumentation of "Night," let's say "Night to Remember" versus. And I don't mean to use the word versus like you're competing, but think of a song like Dynasty, let's say Groove Control. You hear Groove Control, just the instrumental. And, you know, yeah, it's the same, but you can tell there's a difference, the distinctive difference there. And only music lovers that understand, you know, whether it was Minneapolis, you knew, okay, the time, you can do the instrumental of the time, versus the instrumental of a Prince song. Now, granted, Prince played a lot of those instruments from the time, from that first album. He played all those instruments himself and just put the time in. But at the same time, once the time started doing Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis and Monty and Jelly Bean, and they did what they did, you know, to give their sound, especially once by the time, What Time Is It came out and Ice Cream Castles and all of that, you can definitely hear. Yeah, it's all a part of that Minneapolis sound, just like when you say that Solar sound. But you understood the distinctiveness. And that's why.
Yeah, someone,
that's why. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. Someone said, that's why. I need you to finish your thought. That's why what?
No, that's why it was always, that distinctive. You can, to me, to the purist, and again, when people say purist, they think you're a snob. No. It's just you like what you like, and it's like you can definitely tell it's Shalimar. You can definitely tell it's Dynasty, even if you just put the instrumentals side by side to each other, because you understood
yes.
Howard's voice. Now, adding it, Howard's voice going incorporated into Howard, Jody, and Jeffrey, you knew it was very different from Linda and Nidra and Kevin. You know, and maybe
yeah.
Wardell's singing, you know, Wardell's singing a part.
Ah.
You know.
Hey,
don't let him fool you. He was singing on a couple of them songs.
Yeah,
no,
baby, give me the microphone. Give me the microphone. Hold on, but this right here says Dynasty had a free vocal. Dynasty had a free vocal arrangement. Lakeside had a heavier sound to my ears. And so Lakeside was actually they thought that they were a singing group. So that's why they have so many harmonies and stuff, because that's what they thought they were until they got with Dick Griffey. He said, no, you're a funk group. And so, but with Dynasty's vocal arrangements would be more like the Silvers, because that's Leon was replacing the Silvers with Dynasty. Well, but it went to another level, because then he brought all of us in, and it really changed the directory of the sound. It was a new sound that was created, but it started off, if you listen to Your Piece of the Rock and, you know, that very first Dynasty album, it was a little more softer. But the second album, then that you felt the power coming, and you know, and it got stronger and stronger, as it went. Because Dynasty had some heavy, like a Pepper, Ernest Pepper Reed, the guitar player. Oh, he's a heavy hitter. Heavy hitter. Ricky Freeze, the keyboard player, who was the bass player for the time now. Heavy hitter.
Right.
These guys are they got all this creative, and then I was a progressive jazz, so we got all these guys that have this. We had this progressive jazz. Ricky Freeze, Pepper Reed, and myself, we were really into progressive jazz, but we had to tone it down to be a part of the sound of Solar, and so we kind of like was bringing that element into it, so it changed the sound of Dynasty from the silver sound to the Solar sound. But anyway, man, we're running out of time here. We got another 13 minutes left. Dynasty had a complex vocal arrangement. Yes, we did. And it was because the Silvers, if you ever listen to those guys sing, you would know, like, Lord have mercy. These guys, I mean, They were no joke. They were no joke, and a lot of people didn't know until they knew how good these guys really were. And it's kind of like it was just like, just take a listen real quickly to what I'm saying. Just take a quick listen.
Yesterday, all my troubles seem so far.
My microphone was acting up so bad, man. so I had to switch over to another mic. But thanks, Greg, for the heads up. Listen, guys, want to also remind you tomorrow is Saturday. This is the kickoff of the Solar Weekend. So tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern, not 3, but 2 p.m. Eastern, slamming, jamming, four on the floor for hours straight. You can do whatever you want to do. It's just dance. You can dance for hours straight. Get your little groove on, your little work, your workout on, whatever you want to do. Come hang out with us. We're going to have a lot of fun. And so thank you again for, you know, just blessing Solar, buying the records and supporting our careers and just, you know, helping us to make a name for ourselves. And I just want to keep the legacy alive. I want people to know who we are and what we did and why we did it and how blessed we were by you guys for giving us that platform. Thank you. Thanks to Leon Silvers. Thanks to Mr. Dick Griffey. Rest in peace. And thanks to all my brothers from the Throwdown Brothers, all of them for just, you know, making it so that it was fun and we were able to be a blessing to each other. Anything on your mind in closing, Don?
Man, again, just want to thank everyone for supporting and everyone for coming in and checking out all of this wisdom that Wardell able to just lace out to the masses every Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. So make sure you tune in again every Friday from 3 to 5, and you can hear all of those Solar stories and just how the music inside, you know, going behind the scenes. And, again, I love when we have these Friday shows. There's going to be a chance that I get a chance to do the whole show. You know, he's gonna go sick one day, and I'll definitely come in and do what I need to do.
Hey, and try man, to do come it on justice. In. All right, guys. Well, God bless you. Take care. Hopefully I'm not sick. I just go on vacation. And listen, you guys all be blessed and take care. And we'll talk to you later. And we'll see you tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Later, Don. Later, Greg.
Later.
I'll see you guys later.
Let me get you right.